raise a couple more to the revolution.
We have only three words for you.
Uh-oh.
We're taking over!
The world is alive.
Why not raise a little hay?
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of the Q-Zero Theater Cast. This is your host, Artistic Director Dan Pelletier, here today with an episode that I have been looking forward to for quite some time. This is our roundtable discussion on the art of stage management. So last night we sat down and over Skype, due to, you know, all of the social distancing and all that, we had a roundtable with four stage managers, all of various different experiences and levels of theater that they've worked on. This was just a incredibly in-depth discussion about one of the most misunderstood and underappreciated positions in the theater. And you know, I could not be happier with how the discussion went. So, you know, I'm not going to ramble on too much. Instead, I'm going to throw it over to my past self so everybody can, you know, get an opportunity to, yeah, listen in on in. Now, we did record this 100% via Skype, so I do apologize ahead of time if the audio might be, you know, not as good as our normal episodes. You know, that's just something we'll have to deal with as we're trying to figure out the best way going forward to be recording these remote interviews. But without further ado, here is the Stage Managers Roundtable. We are here tonight with our four stage managers who have all graciously offered to come and share their experiences and teach you all a little bit about the fine art of being a stage manager. So we'll start off with a little introduction. I'll just kind of go around, ask each one of them to you know, let you know who they are and kind of their background. And then from there, I'll ask, you know, some jumping off questions and we'll just, you know, see where things go.
Hi, I'm Monica. I am actually Q-Zero's season stage manager for the 2020 season, which is very exciting because I've never been a season stage manager before. Yeah, I've been doing stage management since the first semester I started theater, which was my second sophomore year of college. So 8 years or so altogether. I sort of fell into a accident, but I can get into that later. So yeah, I've worked with different types of theaters, mainly in New England, community theater, larger professionals, brand new professionals. But yeah, it's not something that I think a lot of people think about when they think of the things that they can do. So I think this is really exciting that we get to tell people and why more people should do it.
Hi, I'm Kelly. I have been working in tech for theater since I was probably a sophomore in high school. But I actually started with sound and then moved to tech directing and then moved into stage management after high school.
So you just like to bounce from thankless job to thankless job.
I'm kind of a jack of all trades. Right now, it's my ongoing challenge with myself to do almost everything, like everything I have the capability of doing within a theater production. So far, I've gotten everything off of my list except for producer and light design. I actually really got into stage management because of Beth, and because I was her ASM a couple times, and then I ended up stage managing for Actor Singers Fringe a couple years ago for Reefer Madness. Now, currently, I'm still technically the stage manager for production of Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, which will be going up after the quarantine is over.
So I am Beth. I have been working in community theater for 52 years, both started as a performer, started doing tech when I was in junior high school, and lighting was very different back then than it is now.
Frankenstein toggles.
Oh yeah, Frankenstein toggles. And if you needed to move more than one light at a time, they were crowbarred together. It was very, very high tech back then. For a long time was predominantly known as a costume designer, and got into stage managing when Peacock Players needed an ASM and was trained by Matthew Gigi, who was 14 at the time. And Tim Lecuye, who is an equity stage manager.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so pretty good training, I would say. I've been stage managing predominantly since then.
I'm Grady. So I've been doing technical theater as a technician of some kind since middle school, but out of college. So in 2010, I started stage management. And then in 2012, I started stage managing professionally. So since then, that's it. That's my job now. Now it's my normal person job. So that's pretty cool. And yeah.
Excellent. So we've got a good mix of the recreational stage manager and the semi-professional and professional. I love that we've got a variety of experiences. Grady, what exactly is your degree in?
Yeah, so I did a double major in education and theater. So I did not theater education, two different things, although I did work at a youth education program for a number of years after college, but just like straight theater, not technical theater, not musical theater, any of that, just a kind of drama degree.
Excellent. And Monica, your undergrad is in?
It's also in drama. So I went to a tiny liberal arts college in Ohio. So that the only option for drama was just to get a BA. So I was educated more in the sort of literary criticism theory side of it. Not that we didn't do like practical things, because obviously we put up shows every semester. So I have no like formal stage management training. It was the first semester I was in the program, I auditioned and I didn't get any parts, but I got assigned to be a stage manager for one act. And then I was just like, oh, I like this. I don't suck at this. Let's do this forever now. So I just sort of like every single like skill I have has been trial by fire. I never took a stage management class. I didn't really know that was a thing until I started working semi-professionally, and people were like, oh yeah, my undergrad is in stage management. I was like, oh, that's a thing I could have done. Oh, okay.
And then just so we kind of have some contrast, Beth and then Kelly, if you want to talk about like what your actual like education background is outside of the theater.
So I am a nurse by trade, currently working full-time as a nurse, and stage managing is an avocation. It's what keeps me busy on the side, and when I'm not doing that, I do also direct and sometimes costume. I've done costumes at the NHTAs for the last 5 years, and stage managed a lot at Actor Singers, at Nashua Theater Guild. I stage managed Q0, did Next to Normal with them. So just a lot of varied stuff. And as I said, also do some directing.
And Kelly, what's your life outside the theater?
Straight out of high school, I started working in customer service. So I currently work as front desk personnel at an inn. Other than that, I also run my own photography company. I am known to be working on usually one show where I'm working backstage in some capacity and usually one show where I'm working on stage in some capacity at any given time.
Excellent. Great. I love it. And Beth, just want to thank you and all of our healthcare workers for everything they're doing right now. So I don't know who wants to start us off, but I think just, you know, again, more so for our listeners who maybe don't either aren't as much in like, you know, performing or working in theater, that are more just like a general audience member. What exactly does a stage manager do? Like if you could like define it down to one or two sentences, you know, what does a stage manager do? What's the job of the stage manager?
I mean, the go-to joke answer is everything, but it's only kind of a joke. Yeah. But I mean, I've actually had to explain this a lot in job interviews, because when you interview for any job and they're like, what's your work experience? And you say stage management, they sort of look at you like, huh? So you have to walk them through, and there's a lot of transferable skills I've learned, because you take a lot of notes. You just sit and listen, and people don't realize that you're taking in everything that they're saying. For me, the hardest thing has always been like juggling all the personalities, especially in a big cast. Like if you're doing a musical and you've got a giant ensemble, and there's just a lot of people to A, keep track of, and then B, make sure that everyone works together. But I find the personal process is the hardest thing to explain to people, because I sit there and take notes. But that's the most important thing, is if you're not doing that efficiently and religiously during rehearsal, you're going to be totally screwed when it comes to tech and performance. Yeah, and then my favorite part is when you finally get to that, you just tell everyone what to do. But I don't know what other people have been with that. But yeah, I find it's difficult to explain to people because there are so many things. But to you, it just feels like, or to me anyway, it feels like one big thing that I'm doing all the time.
I mean, I kind of agree with what Monica says, is that we do everything. But I think our job changes at different points in the production. Like pre-production, we're doing one job. During the production, we're really kind of a secretary. And then when we get into the theater, our job description changes again completely.
We kind of go from being secretary almost to like just complete captain of the ship. Like if there's something that happens on stage that isn't an actor moving around, most likely it had something to do with the stage manager standing backstage on a headset going, okay, and you do this thing now.
Another thing that's really important is that and this is a hill I will die on, by the way, is that I consider stage managers artists. I think there's a misconception that stage managers are just taking notes or are just keeping track of time, both things that we do and need to do. But part of a stage manager's job for running the show isn't just making sure that things like the light goes on at the right time. That is also true, but it's also keeping the integrity of the entire production. And so I think there's a huge misconception that we just take notes or we're just kind of type A. And I think that we have to be type A in a lot of ways, but we're also, there's a lot of artistry to stage management. And I think that that's something people don't realize. I'd also add, we're usually the communication hub for the designers. So that's part of why we have to be writing everything down, is because it's not just for us, but also like, oh my gosh, we added a prop. Well, the prop person has to know that, so I'll put it in the report. And then, just like Monica said, I think a huge part that people have no idea about is the interpersonal. There's so much interpersonal of communicating with different people, different personalities, getting information A to persons B and C, and facilitating conversations or helping with conflict. And there's just so much of that stuff that I think people don't even realize because it gets taken care of kind of out of sight, but that we do a lot of. And safety, all safety all the time. Somebody has to be in charge of that and on top of it.
I know it would be cool, but no, you can't do that.
I worked with a stage manager once that had like little index cards that just said, you just had an OSHA violation. It would just, I mean, they were more of like a joke thing, but they would be like, here you go. Let's not do that.
I like that. I may need to adopt that one.
Yeah. Let's not put a ladder on a platform.
And I know exactly what director we could use it on, Kelly.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, I'll also be the first to admit that I've, you know, committed enough. Monica, you were there when I put a 6-foot ladder on top of 15 feet of scaffolding.
Yes, I was there. I pretended I was not. I did leave in the middle to get a burrito.
Yep. I
also yelled at him for jumping a ladder across the stage while he was on it. So
I heard about that.
Yeah, plenty of, hey, you gotta get things done. I always thought it was interesting that at like the highest level of professional theater that the stage managers are actually in the actors union and not the stagehands union. Can you kind of maybe give a little insight as to why you think that might be?
Once I was just talking to a equity stage manager that I didn't work with. It was just after a show, I sort of grabbed him and asked him a couple of questions. And he said that the reason that actors and stage managers were in the same union is because stage managers are there to protect the actors, which I thought was an interesting way to look at it. And it's kind of how I try to do it, especially because I am not, as anyone's ever met me knows, I'm not a nurturing person by nature. But I'm like, I think like, especially I'm like, guys, I'm yelling at you because I don't want you to die. Also, I don't want the director to kill you. You know, it kind of takes a lot of, there's a lot of things that sort of, you know, actors and directors sort of, they they can go at it or disagree with each other. And I think you're there to run interference sometimes. And it's because there's just a lot of stuff that you never thought you were going to have to do. And I think if you think of yourselves on the same level as the actors, you see that you're there to sort of protect them and the show.
Oh, I think that's a great way to put it. And I think, you know, the image you kind of put in my head there is kind of equating the stage manager has to be the stern parent in the room, because sometimes the director is trying to be the fun parent in the room. So even sometimes, you know, yes, like the actors are all your children, but sometimes you got to yell at the director too.
Yeah, you're dad, not mom.
Do you like what brought you, if anyone wants to talk about, like, what do you enjoy most about like stage managing? Like, what got you into it? What keeps you doing it? Because I think it's definitely something that it's not for everyone. As you know, we talked a little bit before we started recording, like, I've tried it. I mean, I don't hate it, but like, it's not my first choice. But like, you know, I'm assuming you guys really enjoy it. And I've met people that are like really excel at it. So like, what do you enjoy most about it? What got you into it? Why do you keep doing it?
Well, all right, I'll go. So I mentioned I started out as a performer years ago. I was never very good at it, but I enjoyed doing it, and I enjoyed the camaraderie and the community of being involved. Costuming is great. It's very creative, but you're not very involved with the cast. It's very separate from being part of the production. Being a stage manager, I'm at all the rehearsals. I get to meet the people. I get to form relationships and bonds with both the performers and the designers. It's really, to me, encompasses the sense of community and community theater is being able to be involved with every aspect of the production and to see it from so up close.
I know for me personally, I've just always been somebody who wanted to know how things worked and how to like put something together and knowing every part of how something was happening. Like full disclosure, I was the kid who would sit down and instead of watching a movie would watch all of the behind the scenes features. Like that's just always been me. So stage management always really drew me, because for me, it was another way to sort of not only see how something worked, but helping in what is a very, very big way to get everything to not only work, but work cohesively and make a show come together and be a little bit more fluid, which I've always really liked.
I mean, when I first started doing theater, I didn't know what a stage manager was because I was in... my high school, when you were a junior and senior, you had to be in the play every year, or else I never would have. It was a small school, and it's the best thing that ever happened to me. Even if I didn't go into theater, I think it's just performing and being a part of that collaborative effort. I think it's something that every teenager needs to do. So I was in the play. I had a really good time, and I thought I kind of wanted to do acting, but like I said, I didn't get cast, but I got assigned to be somebody's stage manager, and I had a lot of fun. And then after performance closed, there's like a real high that comes with doing a good show and sitting, you know, in the booth or backstage and watching everything go off smoothly. Or sometimes, I kind of hate to say it, there's something exciting about having to fix this right now, and then when you do fix it, nobody notices, you feel like great about yourself. Like there's just a lot of the things that can go wrong and make it really exciting. I mean, obviously you don't want things to go wrong, but there's no such thing as a perfect show. So that's sort of the experience of it sort of made me want to keep going back to it. And actually, Dan, you're kind of the reason why I still do it, because I've sort of given up on it professionally just because the sort of lifestyle wasn't really didn't really click with me. But and so I was kind of like, I could go without doing it again. I've done it. It was fun. And then you asked me to do the shows this season, and I was like, oh, never mind, I miss it.
Well, we're very grateful to have you. I'm glad we talked you out of retirement. Sorry. I retired from theater in 2009 because I was going to be a software engineer. And then, you know, when I went to college, and you know, that lasted all of 4 months, and then I was a theater major.
I was wasn't even gonna get a real job. I was just like, I'll think of something.
Yeah, man, dang. So much of what everyone has said. I love theater to begin with. I started as a performer as a little kid, like third grader or whatever. And so I just loved theater and all of that. And when I started doing technical elements, it was like even more magic. Like finding out more about how it worked made it more magical, not less. And I love the collaboration. And obviously every role in theater is collaborating in some respect, but as a stage manager, you're like sort of part of the hub of that collaboration of designers getting together and putting all the things together, and slowly props come in and you add those, and then lighting comes in and you add those, and you're helping kind of facilitate all of that. And it's just so magical. It's so fun. And like calling a show or running a show and it being like flawless, like holla, that's the best. And like, yeah, problem solving on the fly and being someone that people can trust and ask questions and feel comfortable around and make everybody feel safe and just know that, you know, everything's going to go as well as it can, and being a huge part of that. It's the best. I'm a big nerd about stage managing, so there's a lot to like about it for sure.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, we need those people. And if you're going to do it professionally, you better love it. So it's glad, you know, I love getting to hear the passion and, you know, see how much you enjoy it. But I kind of want to then pivot to like, what's either like the hardest part of the job or something that makes it difficult. And maybe even like if you've got a specific story of a challenge, you know. So Grady, you close last time if you want to open this question.
Probably the most difficult, which is something I feel like I'm better now the more I've done it, but is if you're in a situation where something is unsafe or a rehearsal needs to be held or something has to go on, and if other people in the room are not on the same page as you, and having to just stand your ground and be like, we're not running with this set piece, or we're holding, or we need to clear this safety concern or whatever. A lot of the time, thankfully, I think most people are on the same page, but particularly like earlier in my career when I just started, feeling empowered to step up and say that, because it is your job. Like, it's my job to stop something dangerous from happening. But also, if other people are like, nah, it's fine, that's a tricky position to be in. And I think kind of navigating those relational things in a still a calm, like respectful way, but also still like getting what needs to be done. I think the relational stuff is always the most difficult, and not always because it's bad, but I think there's just a lot to navigate and to do in a way that's still keeping the sort of respect in the room as where it should be, but also being like, but like, we're really going to hold this rehearsal until we fix this. So like that balance, I think, can be tricky, and it changes depending on who you're working with and the personality in the room. So it's not like you can just autopilot the situation. It kind of has to be like assessing everybody in the room all the time. And I enjoy that piece of the work for sure, but it's definitely challenging. I would say it's one of the most challenging, is just kind of those dynamics in all sorts of scenarios, but most especially when it's something difficult.
Yeah, I have a like really similar experience with that, especially transitioning out of doing theater in college to doing theater professionally. Because especially like our mainstay shows were always directed by the professor. So you get used to deferring to the director because they have a PhD and they put your grades on paper and they're in charge. Like they're, even though you're legally an adult, they're the adult in the room. And then also all of the actors you're working with, they're your friends, you live with them, you spend all your time. So they know you really well. And so if you have to sort of be sharp, they know that's not what you're like all the time. It's just we're in rehearsal. So I found being like working with people that you know like really intimately is very different from working with people who are basically strangers. So the first time I worked professionally, I sort of had to be reminded, usually by the assistant director, that I was actually the authority in the room and I could tell the director to shut up. Not that I did a lot. It was like one time. But I had to be like told that, no, this is like, I think owning the rehearsal room was something that was difficult for me to do at first, especially because, again, if you've ever met me, you know, I look a lot younger than I am. So when I was 24, got my first real job. I looked like 18. So it was a lot of them like, no, I'm the adult here. So it was like, that was tough. And then you sort of, the more people you work with, the better you get at it. But then there's the sort of new wrinkle of you have to get used to the idea that not everyone you work with is going to like you. Not that anyone's like purposefully antagonistic, but you just aren't going to get along with everybody. And sometimes it's, you know, just sometimes it's not a person you have to interact with a lot, but sometimes also I've had some directors that you just don't click with, and that can be really difficult. There's actually a pretty big deal director in New Hampshire Theater who I worked with once, and he did not like me. I will not say who it was, especially because I'm not type A, which is kind of unusual for a stage manager. I'm usually kind of laid back. And he was very type A, and he knew what he wanted, and I could not give it to him because it was literally impossible. But so there's things like that where you have to be like, you know what, I'm going to let this battle slide because I can't win, and you don't want to be the stage manager who's known for getting into shouting matches with prominent directors. So...
Well, it depends how much equity you've built up elsewhere. If you can get away with it, you know, if you can yell at them and then they respect you, good thing. If you yell at them and then they blacklist you, bad thing.
Yeah, I had a pretty good relationship with the artistic director of the theater, but I was still the new person in the room, and I didn't want to burn that bridge. But I don't know if I succeeded.
Well, you tried, and sometimes that's all you can ask for.
I mean, the show went up, and people liked it, so
yeah,
that matters in the end.
Then who cares what else, what happened before then?
Hello, Q0 fans. Q0 business advisor and performer Jake Ranlett here, interrupting your regularly scheduled podcast to talk about Q0 sponsorship and membership. As I'm sure you know, theater is really expensive, and we cannot survive on ticket sales alone, which is why we have these two awesome programs that not only allow Q0 to continue to revolutionize the performing arts scene in New Hampshire, but has incredible benefits for you as well. Sponsors get their name and logo in our playbill, on our posters, mentioned in our podcasts, listed on our press releases, and so much more. We go out of our way to make sure everyone knows about you and thanks you for helping make Q0 possible. We also have our membership program for individuals who want a little bit more bang for their buck and a lot more Q0 in their lives. We have 10 different levels of membership, starting as low as $2 a month. Every level of membership comes with awesome perks, such as early access to the Q0 Theater Cast, discounts on tickets and merchandise, exclusive behind-the-scenes video content, the ability to read our new works blog, and so much more. The more you give, the more you get. If you want to be a vital part of the Q0 revolution, head on over to cztheater.com and click the Support CZT link to become a sponsor or a member today. And now, back to the podcast.
Beth or Kelly, most difficult part of the job or biggest challenge?
I think especially for a woman of a certain age, it's having the men in the room believe that I know enough to do the job. and I think that's something for women across the board. Mm. But
once you
hit a certain age, I think that men my age don't believe that I should be stage managing, that I don't have the background or the knowledge or the know-how to be doing what I do.
Kind of, you kind of said it a little bit, you know, it's the old, do you find that that is specifically of men that are similar to your generation? And do you see a change when you're working with like a younger director or team, or is it just across the board? Do you feel that there's some, even if it's not fully intentional, just some almost inherent, I'm blanking on the word I want to use, but just like, the, you know, the sex, but I was looking for a qualifier. Like they're not trying to be sexist, but they are, whether they realize they're doing it or not. Or even if it is even more blatant, do you see, like, is it across the board that, or is it more so an older generation, or?
I think that it's more prevalent in the older generation, but it can occur in all ages. I do see it more in men, you know, 45, 50 and up, who don't see women as equals in the theater world.
I mean, I've watched an older gentleman, you know, take a tool out of a female's hand and hand her a paintbrush and be like, yeah, this is your tool, not the screw gun. And I'm just like, what are you doing? This girl, like, and like, I knew her and I'm like, this girl, like, I promise you, this girl could build this set piece before you could even finish taking measurements.
Yeah, the best TD set builder I know is a woman. So
yeah, exactly. Like I mean, right here we've got four great stage managers, all female. I don't know how it breaks down. Like, you know, I think I've worked on a community level. I think I've definitely worked with more. And when I was in college, I think most of our stage managers were female. You know, do you guys see that? And if so, like, why do you think it's, and at least on our level, kind of like a lot of, you know, females go into it?
Yeah, I guess most of the stage managers I know and I've worked with have been women. I mean, I know I've met a couple of men. I've worked with one male stage manager. Oh, not including yourself. So two.
I was barely a stage manager. It was one of those, like, I was the most qualified person to be stage manager in the room at the time and got to be stage manager until they found someone more qualified.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, I haven't worked with a lot of male stage managers. And actually, at a company I worked for in Vermont, I had a stage manager who I ASM'd for multiple shows, who was kind of my mentor, and she was amazing. Yeah, so I think it's mostly women. I don't know if it's just sort of like we're just more better suited for it because of multitasking, or if we're just more drawn to it because I don't know why. I haven't, of the men I've worked with, none of them have been bad at it. I just think that maybe they're drawn to the more specified areas, because we have to be sort of jacks of all trades, or Jills if you prefer. Even if you don't know how to do everything, you know what goes into everything. And I don't know what you guys think of it, because
going off of what you just said, definitely I've found that my male counterparts when working on a show, a lot of the time, seem to be a little bit more drawn to the areas where they know if they were to say it to, like, the general public would understand what job they're doing. Because I find that, ironically enough, contrary to what I think a lot of jokes say, I find that a lot of men unintentionally sort of look for notoriety in what they're doing, from my personal experience when it comes to men in theater.
That's a fair statement.
But the stage manager, for instance, like while you're doing this particular podcast, nobody quite knows exactly what we do because we do so much. So when you tell somebody, yeah, I'm stage managing this show, it usually, I know I immediately now naturally follow it up with, so this is what this means that I do.
Greedy, I think this question is probably more specific for you. Because I know, like, usually on the community level, a show maybe only has anywhere from 3 to 8 performances. In New Hampshire, usually the professional ones maybe run like 4 or 5 weekends. So it could be like 16 to 20 performances. What's the longest run of shows that you've stage managed, and what's the biggest challenge of stage managing a show, and like what's different about a show that like runs 1 or 2 weekends versus something that might have a more elongated run?
I don't think I've had a particularly long run. I think probably the longest maybe was 6 weeks, so nothing too crazy. There's so much. I mean, I think it would be the same if it ran, like, in theory, you still have to keep things consistent between if there's 3 performances versus if there's 36 performances. But between the first show or the preview or whatever and closing, if there's 3, there's just less time for things to change or for people to get either too comfortable or bored. I'm talking about performers, and start sort of throwing in new things. And it's interesting to try to figure out as a stage manager, where is the room, right? Because no show is ever going to be exactly the same. That's not going to happen. Even if that's what we're going for, it's not going to happen, because if the actors are in the moment, they might like find a moment they've never found before. And kind of where is that line of like leaving space for them to have a genuine performance and like, okay, y'all are ad-libbing and that's not what the director's intention was, and kind of where that line is. And I think that is harder with a longer run because, like I said, people either get bored or they think something's funny, or they made a joke one time in rehearsal and now they think it's funny, but it's not actually in the script. And, you know, week 4 it comes out and you're like, we gotta cut that. So I think from a technical side, things are probably likely to get more consistent the more shows, and from a performance side, things are likely to get perhaps less consistent. And so I think that boundary of like kind of figuring out what to address and what's kind of in the spirit of the intentions of the director and what is like too far or close to too far, and like, hey guys, all right, no more than what you just did, and what that looks like can be interesting. And the longer a run is, just the more time there is to have those things happen.
Yeah, I know the longest performance report I ever wrote was chewing out an actor for ad-libbing too much. I just am like, here's a bullet point, bullet-pointed list of things that so-and-so has done that were not in the show on opening night. Oh, God. I don't know, but,
so true.
You know, any of you other guys, what's, you know, a longer run if you've, you know, done something that's more, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks, but if you, you know, you want to build off of anything there?
I mean, the most performances I've done is I did a summer season at the Winnipesaukee Playhouse a couple years ago. And so that's like 2 weeks of runs, but you're doing 6 shows a week. So that's a lot in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And so especially we were doing High Society, which is a perfectly okay show. And so understandably, the ensemble got a little bit bored, and most of the times I let it slide, but our dance captain was a bit of a knave, and so he decided, just to keep it fresh for the dancers, that they would sort of have a theme every night of how they would imagine who they were. And one night they went with secret agents and he somersaulted across the stage, and so I was like, no, you're not allowed to do that never again. I will kill you.
Strong but wrong.
Yeah. That's a very good example of strong but wrong. Yeah, that was the like the worst offense of actors taking liberties that I've ever encountered.
Yeah. Does anyone else want to share a horror story of either an actor or maybe even just a, you know, you start moving the set piece and it starts falling apart or whatnot? Who's got a fun horror story? Anybody?
I have a great horror story. All right. I was working on a production that had 17 sword fights during the course of each performance. And so our fight calls were pretty intense.
Yeah.
I had a fight captain who was supposed to run call for me, and he was late for call. And then he was very late for call, so I started running fight call without him. And then he showed up and expected to fight that night after missing his own fight call. And I was like, no, that's not the way it works. And actually had a heated discussion with this actor who was insistent that he be allowed to fight full on during that tech rehearsal. And I was like, no.
Yeah.
You know, the whole reason of having a fight captain to run fight calls is that everybody's safe. And if anybody else didn't show up for fight call, they would not have a sword that night. Yeah. Sorry.
No, that's that. I I use an example when I work with my students or really any actors, especially on fight stuff, where I'm like, I had to bleach and disinfect the stage at intermission once. I never want to have to do that again.
Yeah.
So maybe. We're going to take all safety precautions very seriously.
I've also started act two of a tech run without an actor who insisted on when places were called was her turn to go to the bathroom.
Mm.
And after 4 days of that and me talking to her consistently, I said, if you're not there, I'm going to start without you. And places got called and she wasn't there. And the lights went up and she wasn't there. Oh, and God. I got yelled at until the director was told what happened. And then she got yelled at and it never happened again.
Yeah. Well, at least it was during a rehearsal. When I was in high school and we did Midsummer Night's Dream, we started act two with Demetrius and Lysander standing there for no less than 5 minutes waiting for Helena and Hermia because places didn't get heard in the girls' dressing room. So there was a nice sit down chat of both the student stage manager, the director, and the girls for just being too loud in their dressing room. Cause that was like the Saturday matinee that and you know, like juniors in high school can't ad lib in iambic pentameter. So they didn't know what to say.
I don't know that I could ad lib in iambic pentameter.
I've never met anyone that could ad lib in iambic pentameter, but I did once watch an actor go up on lines during Seussical and ad lib but keep the meter.
That I can see.
Yeah, that's like impressive. We're like, those weren't the lines, were they? He's like, no, but they sounded right.
Oh, that matters, right?
Yeah, they rhymed and they were in the meter. Anyone else? Good. Give us some good. You know,
during Ernest, we had to send out a search party. Remember?
I try not to.
Show 2 out of 3. Yeah. Our Lane was not there, and he is the first person on stage, and he does a little mime show before the show really begins. And he was not there, and we could not find him, and we were calling and texting, and luckily he only lived a couple minutes away, so I sent Jack and Algernon to go to his apartment, and he was asleep. Yes, he works nights and had some, anyway, so he finally made it, and I didn't kill anyone, and the show went up. It was a really good show, actually. It was
a good performance, all things considered.
It was, it was one of, I mean, there was only three, but it was top two, I would say. It was a really good show. It started 15 minutes late, but
there are worse reasons to start a show 15 minutes late.
Yeah, I mean, of all the reasons, but it weren't, nobody would have noticed. Nobody would have known, but it was, that's probably the most harrowing experience. And I did once have an actress like blow out her knee in the middle of Rocky Horror. So, and the worst part about this, I didn't notice because it was a very complicated, like lighting wise, it was really complicated. So we had like lighting cues, and also the spots were going up like at different times. So I was looking at a different part of the stage to make sure that the next guy wasn't ready for his special to hit him. So I didn't notice her. She was doing a split, and I didn't notice her like go into the fetal position.
Did she hold? What happened?
I don't really know what happened. Apparently it hurt that knee before, like a couple years ago. And so but then she like, it was like, you know, 5-10 minutes before the end, like to the end of the show. So she like limped through the end of it. And so they took it. So we had to redo all the choreography and stuff. That was opening night, I believe, of Rocky.
Oh.
That was, who was she playing? She was playing Janet as well. So that was, it was tricky.
Yeah.
To make that work. But we did. And again, like, it was pretty much, no one would have known the difference. She was like such a trooper, but it was, it was kind of terrifying for me, especially because everyone was like, what's wrong with Rebecca? I'm like, oh, is there something wrong with Rebecca? Because I have not been looking at her for the past 5 minutes, so I don't know what's going on. Yeah.
While we were chatting, I kind of came up with, it's the same question, but from two different perspectives. So like, I primarily direct, sometimes I act, and this is something, again, like, I think the stage manager is hugely underappreciated and misunderstood. So, like, what is something that, like, I as a director or directors in general
could do to make this that like make the stage manager's life easier? And then from like a similar perspective, what could actors be doing that wouldn't take too much effort that would make your life easier?
One of my absolute favorite directors to work with, he's fantastic, but unfortunately he's very, very soft-spoken, and he likes to be right up with his actors when he's blocking scenes, which is great for them because they get wonderful like one-on-one attention with him. The only issue is that from where I'm seated, so I can take all of the blocking down and write all of my notes, I can't hear him. There's sort of two ways you can go about that. Either speak up a little bit and take a note as to where the vantage point of everybody who needs to hear what you're saying, not just your actors, are. This director in particular, I've got him very close with. So he ends up, because he types it all in a PDF, he just sends it to me. So like, so long as you're making sure that everything you're communicating to people gets heard by the stage manager, that's usually my biggest thing with directors. And with actors is just, if I have to tell one more person to stop talking during rehearsal, I swear.
Oh yeah.
I feel you. Even as a director, I think one of the last rehearsals we had for with my high schoolers before the shutdown or whatever, I just remember before rehearsal going like, hey, you guys need to stop talking. We don't talk that much. And then in the middle of the rehearsal, just being like, you guys don't talk that much? Those were the words you said before this rehearsal, and yet here we are.
Oh, yeah. I swear we were being quiet.
Yeah. It's just that all of you were being quiet at the same time.
Yeah. Which people very much not quiet.
Oh, yeah. Well, the actors whispering is like normal people yelling.
But then, they're standing center stage and you can't hear them.
Yeah. You need to project.
Yeah. But not back.
I'm reading along and I don't know what words you're saying.
Yeah. I wrote the scene and I don't know what you just said. I've had that.
Oh, man. One thing I specifically remember from the directing class I took in college was when you're giving direction to your actors, always say left and right so your stage manager knows what's going on. Because I work with a lot of directors who go say, and then you go over there. And if you don't happen to be looking at where he's pointing, you're like, all right, where's over there? And you just kind of have to guess.
So my big directorial pet peeve is directors who like to add things during tech week. Like ropes swinging across the stage with actors on them. Or yes, yes.
That happened in a series together.
No.
I'm stressed out by that.
Yeah, it's one of my biggest pet peeves, because at that point we should just be fixing everything, not adding sensationalism and risk management and Beth's heart condition. From an actor standpoint, I think for the most part they try, but they need to see rehearsals as less social time and more serious time. It's, you know, we're there to have fun and we're there for camaraderie, but just because it's community theater doesn't mean that we can't be professional about it.
Preach. Yes. I feel like most of the time I have been able to form really good relationships with most of the directors I've worked with. And I think part of that is viewing your stage manager as a collaborator with you or a teammate with you, and not somebody that you can get to do tasks or, you know, you guys are on the same team. And so treating your stage manager like you're on the same team, which maybe that just means meet beforehand and go over expectations or whatever. But that also means talking to and in front of actors and just keeping that level of respect in the room. I think most people do that, but I think it's just helpful to have that mindset that, like, your stage manager isn't just like your lackey that's writing down what you're saying. You guys are working together with the actors, all of you. And so just viewing them as a collaborator is huge. And then actors, this is everybody, but actors specifically, read what I send you. I send out a call that says where, when, and how, so please read it. I send you line notes that take me 45 minutes to type. Please look at them. Like, just things like that. Like, I don't just do those things for fun. I'm happy to do it. It's part of my job. It's not a problem. But, like, it's just not really an excuse to be like, I didn't know where rehearsal was when I sent you an email that the very top of the report says where the rehearsal is, like, or the very top of the call. It's just things like that that are like, I am, you know, ready and willing to show grace to people, but also, like, if I give you a document that has all the information, it's not really an excuse that you, like, didn't know it because I sent it to you. So just reading things that I send, we don't send things arbitrarily or, like, with no point. So that's a thing.
Feeding on what Grady was saying is that, you know, we spend a lot of time filling out these rehearsal reports after every single rehearsal and emailing them out. And I shouldn't get a message from the props person saying, hey, can you write me a list? Everything is in the tech rehearsal, rehearsal report. It's there for that specific purpose. I'm working full time too. I don't have time to comb 40 rehearsal reports for you and make a list.
I will say when I'm elected president, I'm going to make it a felony to not read emails. Because that is, as a director and as a someone that runs a high school drama club, that's the bane of my existence. That, you know, be like, oh, I didn't need to know that. Well, I emailed it to you. I printed it out. I handed it to you. We spoke about it. You know, your parents signed something saying that you and they read it, and yet you forgot when load-in is.
And in a rehearsal report, you're like, you should read the whole thing, but, like, it's sectioned out for you. Yeah, if you're a lighting designer, just go to the lighting box.
Yeah, I've had that.
You should read the whole thing. Read the whole thing. But if you're not going to read the whole thing, at least read your section, please.
Fine. We've been talking for almost an hour now, so I feel like we've got a lot of good content here. Does anyone have any final thoughts on stage management? Anything we didn't get to talk about? Either, you know, things you want people to know about stage managers?
That we're people too and deserve a little bit of respect.
You too. Yeah.
A lot of respect, I would like to actually.
Yep.
I think people don't, both in and out of theater, don't realize how collaborative what we do is. Because I've worked with a couple of actors even who don't really understand that there's an army of people doing other things. That are making what they do possible. Because I worked with an actor who was in college at the time, and he was annoyed that he had to take a tech class. And I had to explain to him why, no, he really should take that tech class, and he will be a better actor and a better person because of it. I don't know if he believed me. I hope he did. I think it's just like theater is it's an art, but it's, and everyone's doing their own individual thing, but it all has to come together. And I think what the exciting thing that we do is we bring it all together. And even if it's just, we write it all in one place so you can reference it later.
Yeah. I think if your friends are stage managers or technicians of any kind, designers or directors or anything like that, and they tell you about their show, you could go see the show and they would really appreciate it. I think I have had people literally say, like, are you in this or are you just stage managing? And I'm like, but if you watch the show that I'm stage managing, all of that I did. Like, it's just in a different way. And I think people are like, oh, well, I won't see you on stage, so I won't go. And it's like, but this is my work. I put a lot into this. You actually see a lot of my work. It's just in a different way than being on the stage. So see your friends' shows if they're technicians and everything. It matters. I don't want to speak for everyone, but it matters to me when people come and see my shows. And I think it's really easy to be like, this person's an actor, so I'll go see them perform. But technicians, designers, sound designers, lighting designers, that their work is out there too, and they want you to see it. So that's a little, okay, I'll get off my pedestal now, but I had to say, that soapbox.
I was enjoying it because that's how I feel too.
I think it's definitely an important thing. I've had that happen as a director. I've seen that happen to the playwright. They're like, oh, well, hopefully you can be in the next one. They're like, but I wrote the show. It's my show. So yeah, definitely. We all work just as hard, and everybody deserves more thanks than they'll ever get. Excellent. Well, again, thank you all for being a part of our first ever Skype roundtable. I'm hoping that we can start doing more of these, and I'm looking to do, directing and acting and things like that, especially because we, a lot of times we're doing ones where we're like, we're interviewing the actors in our show, but now we don't have a show until August, if we're lucky. So yeah, thank you guys very much. I've got a lot of fun editing that I'm gonna go do, but everybody stay safe out there, and thank you for all of your wonderful stories and knowledge on stage managing.
Thanks for having us on.
Thank you.
And thus concludes our first ever multi-person Skype interview roundtable. I'd like to once again thank Monica, Grady, Kelly, and Beth for all of their wonderful stories and knowledge. I hope you guys learned a lot. I know I did, even as a director, that someone that's done some stage managing. It was a great, refreshing perspective to see, and hopefully you all now have a lot more respect for your stage manager and a better understanding of everything that they do. So, just gonna wrap things up here. By the time you're hearing this, we'll be right up against our deadline for our world record theater marathon audition videos. Get those in as soon as possible. Be on the lookout for more information regarding Hamlet being moved to the end of August. It's going to be a very busy summer now. We went from a relatively light summer to an overbooked summer. Hooray! Hopefully, the situation regarding the pandemic will start getting better real soon, and we'll be able to return to normalcy and start putting out those high-quality theater productions that you love, and you'll get out there and support your arts organizations by seeing their shows rather than just throwing money at us while we perform through you via Zoom and things like that. But that's a story for another day. Well, one last time, thank you all for listening. This is Artistic Director Dan Pelletier, and as we always say, support local theater and join the revolution.